The Mace Finnegan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Adam Finnegan here with you a little bit early this week. Chase and Big Joe at SEC Media Days. They will be on from noon to 3 this week. So we are happy to be on a little bit earlier with you. Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, will join us in just a few moments. He's at ESPN headquarters, I believe, for a big NFL preseason meeting of some kind. Very important business for Teron Davenport. But as soon as he's done with that, he will join us. So we're talking Vanderbilt, talking about how can they possibly have an encore after last season's 7-6 overall record, a bowl appearance, a bowl win for the Vanderbilt Commodores.
A lot of, and don't you forget it.
I won't. I didn't.
Because there are those that used to get on Derek Mason, not our Derek Mason, but Coach Derek Mason, always make the distinction, because even as recently as just a few weeks ago, somebody got the two confused.
We did have some texters last week when Derek was late to the show because he got pulled over. We did have a couple of texters say, you should have said you were the other Derek Mace.
Oh, that's a great play by both. Either could use that.
Yes.
Put it on the other.
So if Coach Mason is listening,
right,
feel free to use that on Derek Mason.
There was a lot of people that like to throw shade at Derek Mason because they always lost the bowl game. He made the bowl game at 6-6 a couple times beating Tennessee to get to 6-6. Lost the bowl game, and then there would be Tennessee fans throwing shade going, he's never had a winning record, which is true. So when you win the bowl game and go to 7-6, you have to flex a little bit and say, yeah, they won the bowl game. Even though most people are like, the bowl game. If you lose the bowl game, well, you know, who cares about the bowl game?
Yes. So we will talk Diego Pavia. We will talk Vanderbilt. Teron Davenport tells us he's ready. So David James, if you will, would you please get in contact with Teron Davenport? Because he is ready for us. We will talk Diego Pavia.
Yeah, because I think the offense for Vanderbilt and Diego Pavia is a central part of the discussion. We know he's going to be the center of attention anyway, so I want to get into Vanderbilt's offense this year and the things that I think will be key in the encore. And the number one thing, of course, is the mental approach of you have to know that you are the underdog and you've got to play your best every week. You're not going to sneak up on anybody this year. The mental side will be tougher this year from the outset. So what can Vanderbilt do to be better, knowing that the opposition is going to know much more about you than they did 1 year ago?
We are joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by our friend Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter. Teron, thank you for joining us. I know that you have a busy day up in Bristol. I do want to ask you about something we're seeing in the NFL. So there have only been 2 second-round NFL draft picks who have signed their contracts. Carson Schwechinger, I believe is how you pronounce it, the linebacker in Cleveland, and Houston wide receiver Jaden Higgins. Now, they both received fully guaranteed contracts, which is the reason why they're signed and nobody else is. That includes Femi Oladejo, the Titans edge rusher who was drafted in the second round. I'm curious how much leverage do these second round picks, including Oladejo, truly have in this scenario with teams starting to report for training camp this week and next?
Yeah, well, I mean, they obviously have a lot of leverage. They're second round picks and they're players that the teams value. I think the big thing is just, as you mentioned, the guaranteed contracts that, you know, were given out, that really makes it tougher to negotiate and say, hey, he got one, why can't I get one? We're both second-round picks. So that's the big issue. A lot of times there's smaller things that have to be worked out, like with Cameron Ward stuff. He had a little hiccup that they had to work out, but it got done and it was good. So that's more or less the big thing, the guaranteed part of it.
Are there any concerns may not be the right word, but it's the only one that's coming to mind right now. Are there any concerns that Oladejo may not report to training camp next week based on this?
Nothing that I know of. I know that during OTAs and minicamp, there's a waiver that they sign, just guaranteed that the team will negotiate in good faith. I'm not sure how that works with a quote-unquote holdout, which is in essence what it becomes, you know, if they don't report.
So two of your colleagues at ESPN, Don Van Natta Jr. and Kalen Kaler, wrote a story last week about the NFLPA, the NFL, the confidentiality agreement with the between the two, Lloyd Howell Jr.'s role in all of this as NFLPA executive director, maybe a conflict of interest. There are a lot of different rabbit holes you can go down on this story. What is your general read on this story that seems to be picking up steam?
Yeah, you know what? Honestly, I did not get to check that story out. I was in New York and in Philly last week, and work was not on my mind, so I can't really speak to that.
That is fair. That is fair.
Well, Teron, I encourage you to check it out because I think it's a really nuanced story, and it just makes me wonder behind the scenes the history of the NFLPA and now the future. And so I think so. Let's table the discussion for now, but I would love to come back to you on this as we move forward because it's so important. And you know the history of the Major League Baseball Players Association, which is widely considered the strongest. We're talking about two different leagues, two different sets of rules, but I do think it's a really important story. So let me hit you with this on Juwan Jennings. This is another one that it's always interesting to sort of track the market of different players. And here's a guy that grew up in this area, you know, Ravenwood High School, University of Tennessee, wasn't ever handed anything at the NFL level. He's carved out a really good career. The 49ers are at a really interesting place in their window, if you want to call it that. He now wants a new deal or a trade. So what do you think can happen? What comes to mind as you see that unfold?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think he does have some leverage because he is a guy that they kind of used in that Deebo Samuel type of role where, you know, they want him to catch and run. They use him in the red zone and those types of things, big body. But I don't think that he has a whole lot of leverage because the 49ers, and especially Kyle Shanahan, they're of the belief of his system is what makes it. Like he feels like it's more about the X's and O's than the Joes. Now, I don't agree, but that being said, that's kind of the approach there. And it's interesting that he's asking for, you know, this type of situation because very similar to Juwan Jennings is Nick Westbrook-McKinney, you know, the old Honda Accord. He's not down there in Miami because they felt like the Accord, could be traded in for another car.
That brings to mind a question for me. Is he a good enough player, Jennings, to ask for a trade? If he doesn't get the new deal, if the 49ers just say, hey, Juwan, we love you. Here's what we can do. And if he says, no, I want to be traded, what's the trade market for a player like him?
Yeah, I don't think there's a huge trade market for a player like him. Like, don't get me wrong. He's a big body. Yeah. He's tough. He's gifted. But I think he's one of those players where he's not a unique athlete, like a unique wide receiver. You could find Juwan Jennings. I mean, I just mentioned Nick Westbrook-McKinney, who was an undrafted free agent. So there are other guys that you could get along those lines. Obviously, it's already been proven what he brings works. But at the same time, it goes back to what I said, the system, the X's and O's over the Joes. Now, there are exceptions, right? Like you look at George Kittle, you look at Christian McCaffrey. Like those are guys they put in the system and it really elevates it. But at the same time, I don't believe that Jennings is as special as like a Kittle or McCaffrey.
With Purdy now heading into another phase of his career, you know, he's got the contract now. You've got McCaffrey and Kittle, guys who are a year older. And if, you know, they play so hard and they've been banged up. What do you think the window looks like for the 49ers now?
Oh, I mean, I think it's now. I think it's now.
But you think
year.
They could bounce back? You think they could still bounce back?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they have a whole lot of players. And remember, Robert Saleh is back running that defense. And he had that place rocking, you know, as far as the defense is concerned and stopping people. So I would say their window this year, next year. But guys are getting older, right? George Kittle is getting older. McCaffrey, I don't know. We'll see. You know what I mean? But
would you take him with your first pick in the fantasy if he's the guy that?
No. I'm taking Saquon. That's who I would pick. Saquon. You know.
Right. Oh, I think for sure he'll be the number one pick. I'm curious where if McCaffrey's fourth or fifth, and you're in your fantasy league and you've got that pick right where he's going to be sitting there, and it's him or another guy. If you can bite on McCaffrey early.
I'll take one of them. Look, you got Malik Nabers. You got Jets, Justin Jefferson. You got the best receiver in the league, Jamar Chase. Like, there's a lot of other options that I would take over McCaffrey. because the injury, and then just you don't know.
You don't know.
Teron, I know that you have a busy schedule today, so we appreciate you taking some time to join us. We'll chat next week.
All right, for sure. And, hey, let's go Mets.
There you go. We got a long way to go, Teron, but we're in position. Manaea looked good yesterday. We got Senga back. It's going to be a good second half.
Let's go.
Thank you, Teron. We'll talk next week.
Yep, appreciate it.
Teron Davenport joining us quickly on the program. There's an ESPN NFL Nation Summit in Bristol right now, and they're on break. So we appreciate Teron Davenport for taking time.
A summit.
That's what I called it. But it,
oh, you called it the summit.
I called
They're
it
not
summit.
Calling this a summit.
No, I have called it the summit.
Okay.
They might be
a
calling it.
A summit would imply that these are very important talks.
I imagine it is important because Teron Davenport is
if
there.
If he's there, it's important.
But I do want to touch on something I asked about. I asked Teron about. So 30 of 32 players drafted in the second round are still without contracts.
Including the Titans.
Including Femi Oladejo, the edge rusher the Titans selected in the second round. By the way, Titans rookies and veterans report a week from tomorrow. So training camp right around the corner. But 30 of 32.
Get ready to analyze the films.
Yes.
Of the social media snippets. Spirals.
Yes. The social media snippets. So 30 of 32 second round picks have not signed their contracts. The first second-round pick to sign was Jaden Higgins, drafted with the second second-round pick, number 34 overall. That's hard to describe there. Number 34 overall, the Texans took wide receiver Jaden Higgins, and they made him the first second-round pick in NFL history to have a fully guaranteed contract. The Cleveland Browns then signed linebacker Carson Schwechinger, who was drafted one spot ahead of Jaden Higgins. They signed him to a fully guaranteed contract. So the top two picks of the second round have received fully guaranteed contracts, the first two second round picks in NFL history to do so.
And so the question is why? Why did these guys become the two? Because it's a mini version of the Deshaun Watson thing, right? It's a precedent setter, and it's got all of the other picks going, whoa, they got guarantees, so we should get guarantees. Especially the Titans' second-round pick, who is a high second-round pick. It's one thing for a team to say, well, those are higher second-round picks. We're not going to guarantee our lower second-round pick. But I think, do you say Oladejo?
Oladejo,
I got to keep practicing so it rolls off the tongue.
Femi Oladejo
and his agent have to be thinking, hey, we got to explore this. And if you're the Titans, what do? Just guarantee it?
And now we do have a holdout because the Los Angeles Chargers reported to training camp, rookies reported to training camp, I should say, over the weekend. So Trey Harris, a rookie wide receiver, did not show up. So we do have our first official holdout of the second round picks who have not signed. And the question is, again, so the two players who received fully guaranteed contracts were the top two picks of the second round.
And Oladejo was the third or fourth pick in the second round.
Well, they traded down, didn't they? So he was later in the round.
Oh, I forgot about that. What pick was he in the second round?
I am checking right now. Femi Oladejo was the... He was pick 20 of the second round.
Oh, so that was lower. So maybe it's not... I had forgotten about that. What was the move that they did to move down?
They just traded down, I think
To get the third round pick back.
Yeah,
Didn't have a third, so they got the third back by trading down to second. Okay.
So the question...
My memory is jarred.
Yes.
So maybe it wouldn't affect Oladejo as much as the first few. The question is, where does it cut off?
Right.
Because I don't think all 32 second-round picks are going
to
get guaranteed.
You have to
contracts.
Determine how far the 100% guarantee will go in the second round.
Okay, so what were the two teams that just delved out the guaranteed contracts?
So Houston did it first with Jaden Higgins, who was number 34 overall. So he was the second pick of the second round. The player drafted directly ahead of him, the linebacker in Cleveland, Carson Schwechinger, I believe it's how you pronounce it. he signed a fully guaranteed contract as well. Because he was drafted one ahead of the guy who got the first guarantee.
So what do we think the reaction was with all the teams in the league? They had to be scratching their head going, what are you guys doing? Right?
Right. Similarly to, as you said,
why would you
Deshaun Watson.
Why would a second-round pick ever get a guaranteed contract based on the history of the NFL?
So
more power to them.
Mike Florio did this exercise. He wrote, at the risk of making this blurb too damn long, here's the percentage of full guarantee for each of the 2024 second-round picks. So he said Femi Oladejo was the 20th pick of the second round. Last year, that player had a guarantee of 65.22%. 65.22%. So, do the Titans guarantee roughly 65% of Femi Oladejo's contract?
Do you bump it higher so he could get a win,
right,
so to speak? Maybe that would be the strategy.
But it is interesting, just because, again, when Jaden Higgins of the Houston Texans signed his contract, he became the first second-round pick ever to have a fully guaranteed contract.
Is it guaranteed for all 4 years of the deal?
When I hear fully guaranteed, that's what I
assume. It's not just the first year. It's all
a
year?
Fully guaranteed four-year, wow, $11.7-ish million contract.
What's the advantage to the team in doing that? If he's a total bust, why would you do that?
They must have a lot of faith in him.
Obviously they do, but have they not looked at the history of the NFL and some of the second-round picks that barely play?
So I am curious, now that we have a second-round player, Trey Harris of the Chargers, not showing up to camp, how many more second-round picks don't show up to the start of camp?
I think each individual is going to have to decide if it's worth it to miss a couple days of camp. Because as we know, if you show up 3 or 4 days behind everybody else, it is a legit thing that you're behind, right?
Yes.
So is that extra money worth it? Some agents, I think, will press. Some players, I think, will press to get it done. I think it's fair to say, though, that this is enough of a monkey wrench that there will be a couple of holdouts. There will be some.
So Femi Oladejo, the Titans edge rusher drafted in the second round, still without a contract. He's not alone. 30 of 32 players drafted in the second round have not signed contracts. And the two that have received fully guaranteed contracts. So this is something to keep an eye on when the Titans report to training camp. Rookies and veterans report a week from tomorrow, July 22nd. So something to keep an eye on as we await the start of training camp.
I'm looking for a good writer to write a story and explain to me why a team would want to guarantee a contract to the second round pick.
One texter says, can you explain the implications to the fans of a fully guaranteed contract? Does it impact the cap or is it just owner money?
Well, okay, let's take Treylon Burks. Let's say he were a second round pick and he flounders like he has, or a player like him. The team is on the hook for the money, for every dollar of the contract in year three, year four. There's plenty of second round picks that have flamed out from injury or just poor performance. And you know after 2 years, that guy's not going to help you. So
right.
In year three and four, you still have to pay him every cent of the money. Whereas in the past, if it's not guaranteed, you can cut that guy. It's not like these guys are eating up tons of salary cap space, but every piece of cap space you have is important, despite what Jared tells you. And it's easy money. Your first contract is when you have the most control of a player, when you're the GM. So I just think it's unnecessary cap space. That's why I need to be taught why these two teams decided to go outside the box and guarantee these contracts.
615-737-1025. We will get back into Vanderbilt, specifically Diego Pavia, who will address reporters today at SEC Media Days. What can Pavia and the Commodores offense do for an encore in year two of Pavia next season. We'll discuss that coming up next, 615-737-1025. Before we do that, however, this week's Nashville's Best Deal of the Week is Chiba Hut Toasted Subs, with a menu featuring over 30 signature sub sandwiches, as well as a variety of Rice Krispie treats, salads, and munchies. They combine homegrown food with real people in a relaxed environment. Get half off a $40 gift card now with thegamenashville.com/deals while supplies last. D-Mace Finnegan Adonic, 1025, 1063 of the game. Chase and Big Joe are live in Atlanta for SEC Media Days, and Chase McCabe just shared that Clark Lee will join Big Joe and Chase today at 12:30 right here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. So Vanderbilt coach Clark Lee will join Chase and Big Joe today at 12:30. We are expected to be joined by Martell Height near the end of our program. But let's get back into Vanderbilt, Willie. Because a lot of people are going to be wondering what Diego Pavia is going to do for an encore. And when I went back yesterday and looked at Diego Pavia's numbers in his first season at Vanderbilt, he had a 28-4 touchdown to interception ratio, if you include rushing touchdowns. He had 20 passing touchdowns, 8 rushing touchdowns, and just 4 interceptions. He ran for 800.
How many fumbles? He had a couple.
That I'll have to look back. Yeah. I was looking for that.
I don't know how many the
it.
Other team got. I think he was a little lucky at times, trying to make a heroic pitch that may have bounced out of bounds or his team recovered. But that is something to consider, you know, if you're doing the full ratio. Because the point is the ball is in his hands so much, and he was extremely efficient with the ball.
He
whether
was.
Running or throwing.
He was. And of course, he took college football by storm when he helped engineer a massive upset of then number one Alabama on West End. We all remember the goalposts ending up in the Cumberland River. So what will year two bring for Diego Pavia? I'm intrigued by the idea of Martell Height playing both sides of the ball, and we hope to discuss that with him later in the program. Who knows how much he'll be involved on offense? If I recall correctly, he did play both ways in high school, and that is a trend that we're seeing, of course.
He's also an excellent return man.
He is.
So you want the ball in his hands.
And one player who is not at SEC Media Days, frankly, I'm surprised he's not there, considering his profile, is Eli Stowers. I was reading a mock draft, Willie, I was doing one of those way too early mock drafts for 2026.
Congratulations to you.
I know.
You must have had some free time.
I certainly did. Eli Stowers was the first tight end drafted in this mock draft late in the first round. I believe he was the 20th overall pick in this way too early mock draft. But he had a really good season last year, just north of 600 receiving yards, 5 touchdowns, developed a lot of chemistry with Diego Pavia. So let me ask you this.
He can throw the ball.
He can.
Yeah, I think he had at least one touchdown pass. He was really the second most important guy by far to Pavia in making that offense go, because they already came in with a chemistry. They knew the offense, and the early ability for Stowers and Pavia to set the tone and the patterns and the reads for that offense. I don't know that you could put Stowers. I don't know how many SEC fans can name him. They could all name Pavia. Stowers, I'm not putting him right next to Pavia, but I would say it's Pavia, then Stowers, and then there's a pretty big drop-off in the importance of the offense for Vanderbilt. That was last year's success.
So how do you expect Pavia to build off of his standout first season in Vanderbilt? Because I do believe that there are a lot of people who will say, well, the SEC – They've got footage. They've got film on Pavia. He's not going to be able to shock anybody this coming season, although Vanderbilt coaches can also game plan, so it's not like they're going to be running the same exact things that they ran last season. But I do think there is some skepticism about how Pavia can perform in year two, just now that the SEC is familiar with his game.
Couple of things. I do think the element of surprise and the scheme itself – for about half the season, really did confuse And they got a lot of yards by deception, by just executing really well. And then once the tape got out, it got harder as the year went on, and it became a little bit more about talent, especially as guys like Pavia started getting banged up. Pavia, you know, two-thirds, three-quarters of the way through the season was gutting it out, not at 100%, and some of his teammates were banged up as well, and the offense was struggling. So I think it's still going to be the same offense. I'm curious how much better a passer Pavia can become. I think he's a good passer. If he could add another level to it, that would be good. But more importantly, the skill players around Stowers and Pavia, can they get a guy on the outside? And maybe it's height playing some wide receivers they announced today. Hopefully Junior Sherrill, who has stayed in the program, a local kid, can add another level to his game. And they have brought in a couple of other guys. And so I'm hoping collectively, because I think guys like Richie Hoskins, they've got the really good niche guys that know the role, but they need somebody who can move the needle a little bit on the outside. That would really help open things up and keep those bread and butter plays in the middle where they get the 5, 6, 7 yards of Pavia running or Cedric Alexander running or those little throws to Stowers. If they could open things up a little bit more on the outside with a skill player that the other team has to really game plan for, that would be huge. And then the other part of it is the offensive line. They've invested pretty heavily in the offensive line. It's not one that got by last year by their great strength and protection. It was much more deception. So if they can add some power and strength to the offensive line, it doesn't have to be the best in the league. But if it can be better, and there's a lot of new guys on the offensive line, they feel confident that it'll be their best offensive line under Clark Lee. And that's not saying much because it's been a big weak link for them. But if it's closer to league average, I think that would be a big difference. And that would give Pavia a really good chance to shine.
And I have to imagine that Diego Pavia will enter this season with a huge chip on his shoulder. He feels like the kind of guy who always has a chip on his shoulder, and that's how he's been able to be successful throughout his college football career. I bet Pavia, it would not shock me, Willie, if Diego Pavia had this sort of Michael Jordan-esque, I am going to concoct some slight to motivate myself.
I totally agree. I think he's got that gene in him. And I think I hope people challenge him today and throughout of saying he's not that good.
He was a one-hit wonder in the SEC.
Overhyped. He's overhyped.
Right.
Because you are going to hear that.
Right.
And I think that's the challenge for him. And I hope he's got that Michael Jordan gene.
And he welcomes the attention. He likes to do the back and forth, right?
Yeah.
And so although Pavia, we had this conversation last week about the biggest sports stars in Nashville right now, and we all had Pavia fairly high on our list because of his personality. I mean, he's brash. He's in your face. As I said, he has a gigantic chip on his shoulder. It just seems to be always there. So I'm sure he will receive questions today about, hey, how can you do this again? And I'm hoping that he comes up with some sort of slight, whether it's manufactured or not, that he uses to motivate himself. He seems like the type of guy who would do that, thinking to himself, the rest of the SEC, they thought I was a flash in the pan. I'll show them. I could absolutely see Pavia being that.
Yeah, he's got the advantage of being a little bit older. Stowers is also a little bit older. So you have that going for you. Hopefully the maturity is there. And I think this is the key to what you're saying, Adam. If it's that, I do think you're going to get the best of Diego Pavia. Because I think I have seen athletes before. You do well, you get attention, and nowadays with NIL and all that stuff, I'm sure he is getting things that he's never had before, right? He's getting money, he's getting attention, he's going on Bussing with the Boys, he's at the front row of Predators games, he's getting on the Jumbotron, and he has earned that. But if you now, if you're soaking that up and you're not doing the work, you will get exposed. But I feel like, and I don't know this, but we're going to find out if the chip on his shoulder drives him and he's still doing the same type of work he's always done. If he does that, he's going to have a chance to be successful and he'll do well.
The biggest moment of last season to me, of course, was the win against Alabama. But it was the week after that, because with Vanderbilt knocking off Alabama, Pavia was everywhere. He was doing national interviews. He was on SportsCenter. He was on the Dan Patrick Show. He was on other platforms that I can't even recall. He was everywhere. The Commodores had a game later that week on the road against Kentucky, if I recall the schedule correctly. And Vanderbilt went in there and won. That spoke volumes to me.
He also got hurt in that game and battled his way through. So that showed a lot of character there.
Because it would have been easy for Vanderbilt to be feeling itself after knocking off Alabama. Diego Pavia was the flavor of the week, and he ultimately did not rest on his laurels, so to speak. They went to Lexington. They won a tough road game. That spoke volumes to me, that he wasn't going to allow his overnight success to get to his head. So I am curious about what kind of questions he's asked today, and I will monitor social media to see if anything comes up. But I'm wondering how he – this is the biggest media opportunity he's going to have in terms of the number of people he's going to be in front of. Now, the platform with Dan Patrick, the platform with SportsCenter, those are big platforms. But he's going to be at a podium. He's going to be surrounded by a lot of reporters. I'm sure there are going to be a lot of reporters bringing up the things he said on the Bussin' with the Boys podcast about Vanderbilt ruling the state of Tennessee. I am curious to see how he handles that. I'm sure he's going to handle it well. But I do think that he will find something that is said today that will motivate him entering the season.
It's the test, again, of that character trait. Your greatest strength can be your greatest weakness. And so it will be put to the test. He's going to have to back it up. And I think the person that knows this as well as anybody is Clark Lee. He knows Vanderbilt football. He played Vanderbilt football. He grew up in Nashville. He's seen Vanderbilt teams have a little bit of success and then fall back because they fall into the traps of starting to think you're as good as everybody else. So I know Clark Lee's first thing is, how do I help Diego Pavia by putting better players around him? And that will be a big question that every year we can't answer. All of the predictions, you were asking where we think Vanderbilt will be predicted this year. I think sometimes it's really hard to predict. I think what we found out since NIL is it's really tricky to figure out who's good because everybody's got all these new guys, right? You've got these recruiting classes. It used to be a little easier to project. The returning starters, here's the guys you lost, here's the recruiting class, here are some of the guys that have been redshirting that, you know, were high recruits that have a chance to play. Now the formula is so different. So Vanderbilt is, just like everybody else, they got a lot of new guys. I'm looking at their depth chart or projected depth chart. How far they go is going to be determined a lot by, did they make some smart adds in the transfer portal? The offensive line will be the big center that everybody circles. I think that will be the big one. And then the skill positions, wide receiver. And then the other thing I would say as a detail would be support for Cedric Alexander and A.J. Newberry, who are good tailbacks, but they could use another punch back there as well. They've got a guy named Young, who's a redshirt sophomore transfer. We'll see if he's good. There are guys every year in the SEC you've never heard of that all of a sudden you're like, hey, that guy's pretty good. That's smart scouting and smart GM play, which is now a thing in the SEC.
615-737-1025. What are your expectations for Diego Pavia in year two? SEC Media Days is starting today. It's all week, of course. Chase and Big Joe are there. Clark Lee will join their program at 12:30 today. But I want your expectations for Diego Pavia in year two. 615-737-1025. The Borchetta Bourbon Music City Grand Prix is coming to the Nashville Super Speedway Labor Day weekend, and 1025 The Game has your chance to win VIP tickets to the IndyCar race. Text in the keyword race, R-A-C-E, now to 615-737-1025 to be entered to win a pair of VIP tickets. For more information on the event, visit musiccitygp.com. D-Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025, 1063 The Game. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, talking Vanderbilt and Diego Pavia. Bicycle Boy, our friend Bicycle Boy, is on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Bicycle Boy, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, fellas. A rare call about something not hockey related. I listened to your show the other day about the top, you know, athletes, and was surprised that Pavia was as high as he was. But I started thinking about it, and now based on what you're talking about today, it seems to me like with his ability and his personality, he'd be a great fit for the Arena League. And it appears that the Arena League's kind of making a comeback. What do you think about that? And how does the Arena League go about picking players? They have a draft, or they just kind of find guys out there that love to play football?
Thank you, Bicycle Boy. We might need to get Jeff Fisher on the program.
Yeah,
to answer
it's a good question. It's a good question. I'm pretty sure they don't have a draft at this point.
No.
The Arena League, I would love to see rise back up to where it was in the early 2000s, late 90s, when, in my mind, it was kind of at its peak. I don't even think they had a draft back then. It really is a cascade down of guys who don't make the NFL. Now you've got the other pro leagues. Right, what do you call it? The UFL.
UFL.
The Spring League. And then I think Arena would fall below that. There are certain guys that are perfectly suited for the style that the Arena Football League has. But I don't think you're going to make a great living on that. I think you would be falling back. Pavia, one of the things that makes him great is you can't tell him that he's not an NFL prospect. I remember after they beat Alabama, he was like, my dream's playing in the NFL. And he was a zero-star recruit or whatever. He was a junior college player, New Mexico State. I don't know that I've read an article that even evaluates him as a prospective NFL quarterback. But I think he will jump on somebody's training camp roster and then go through the process. I would think he could fall back in the UFL. But this is what he's trying to prove. Hopefully, this is what drives him to be a great quarterback in this last year of college.
And one thing that I've been seeing a lot of ahead of SEC Media Days is a lot of rankings of the top SEC quarterbacks. On three is the one I have up right now by Andy Staples. And he has Diego Pavia ranked seventh among SEC quarterbacks, which I'm not entirely surprised by. The six ahead of him, according to Andy Staples: DJ Lagway of Florida, Garrett Nussmeier at LSU, Lenora Sellers at South Carolina, Arch Manning, and we will talk Arch Manning, I'm sure, this week, Arch Manning at Texas, John Mateer at Oklahoma, and Austin Simmons at Ole Miss. So
those last two, last I checked, are not established quarterbacks in the league. Right,
so John Mateer was a transfer from Washington State, and Austin Simmons played behind Jackson Dart last season at Ole Miss.
Okay. And these are things that every year in the league, you have to, as a prognosticator, try to project a new starter for quarterback. That's always tough to do. I can remember the process for Carson Beck. He was pretty highly touted before he had gotten a chance to play for Georgia. And he's been okay, right? And now he's not even at, you know, he's not at Georgia anymore. So Pavia, with the 1 year, I'm not surprised at that, because I think there's still going to be some, can he do it again? This is the kind of thing that I think would help that chip on the shoulder, that Michael Jordan gene, creating something. Because I think in Pavia's mind, he could probably look at that list and say, I'm better than those guys.
I played in the SEC. I started in the SEC last season.
I should be higher.
Right.
And that's fine if that's what drives you to do the work and not become complacent. We know for Jordan, it was the perfect thing for him. It's what he needed.
I am really interested to hear Diego Pavia today at SEC Media Days. Vanderbilt has yet to take the stage. It appears that is that Shane Beamer up there, Robbie's favorite, Shane Beamer at the podium at SEC Media Days. It is talking season after all.
And he's another guy that he had a really good year last year, and he's got the quarterback back.
Lenore Sellers.
Sellers, I don't think anybody knew anything about Sellers. Remember the week after Vanderbilt beat Alabama, they played South Carolina. And South Carolina at the time had not had the light go on and really start playing well. And people were shocked that South Carolina probably should have beat Alabama that day. Alabama pulled a Houdini act. I don't know if I would say that. There were a lot of plays that could have swung that game where Alabama lost that game. Alabama found a way to win. But that was a day where I said to myself, the Sellers guy, never heard of him before. This guy's not bad. And then as the year went along, they started getting talked about in a playoff sense. And he's back this year. That guy is a player. That guy is a big-time player. He's coming back. I thought the game he played in Nashville against Vanderbilt was extremely impressive. So what has he got for an encore? That's a great question. I'm sure he's being asked right now.
615-737-1025. We will take your thoughts on Vanderbilt, SEC football. It is SEC Media Days after all. Chase and Big Joe live in Atlanta for SEC Media Days. They will be on from noon to 3 all week, hence why we were on from 9 to noon this week. But coming up next, a former member of the Nashville Sounds is causing quite a stir in Major League Baseball. And I do have a question. Are the Philadelphia Phillies a bunch of babies? Willie, you're biased, but I want to get into this coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063 The Game.